Welcome to the Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen. I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Andrew Riley and Travis Hudson. And we're continuing our series of influential and most impactful favorite video games. Andrew, do you want to talk about the generation of video games that we're talking about today and our guessing game?
Today, we are talking about the fourth generation of video games, which are games that came out for PC in the years between 1988 and 1992, following up on our end of Generation 3 ending in 1997, or were available on the SNES, Super Nintendo system, or the Sega Genesis system. There's one more that I don't even remember what it is.
Game Boy and Game Gear?
Oh, the Game Boy, the handhelds, and of course anything that's in the arcades in the 1988 to 1992 range is also applicable for us. So if you have an arcade game you want to mention, this is the time to bring those up. We're going to be talking about those games, and that's complicated because when we're talking about these generations, it's a broad series of years, but it also spans a wider time period. Because as we noticed last year, last generation, I made a pick for a game that was in my generation as the pick for Paul, but Paul didn't have it because he was considering it for the next generation because that was where he played it more often. So this is not necessarily precise, and we recognize it, but it's the best that we can do within the limitations of those kinds of systems and years that we're trying to do. We are continuing also with the guessing game. We're going to guess games for each other. As I've just mentioned, I tried to guess Tetris for Paul last generation, and it didn't work out. So I didn't get a point there. So we're going to guess one game, and if that game is in our top five based on categories, we will get a point. If it's not in the categories, but it's one of our worthy of discourse games, then it is not worth a point.
All right.
And Travis, why don't you go ahead and tell us what categories we're going to be talking about?
I was going to say, before you steal my thunder, so the five categories are most fun with friends, which we had an interesting pick already in the first round, or first episode, with Paul picking Super Mario Bros. 3, normally a solo game. We have best story, which I think gets a lot better this generation than it did last generation. Best music, which is probably going to keep getting better as well. Most memorable, which we're each free to interpret as however we want. And then your personal best, which, again, can be whatever, however you interpret it. So,
a lot of subjectivity in here.
Although one thing interesting to note that I was not aware we were including arcade games. It doesn't change my picks. It probably actually enhances my picks. So I'm glad to hear we are including arcade games, but I'll know that going forward now.
Well, we talked about that last generation when we were talking about stuff like Rampage and Contra and how they were both arcade and on the NES.
Right.
But so since we're with the NES system, it didn't matter too much, but there could have been arcade games that didn't get over.
That was one thing I definitely noticed was the set. Most of the arcade games I played got released on Super Nintendo anyway, so it's kind of a moot point where if I wanted to, I would include them anyway and just maybe say Blood was better in the arcade than Super Nintendo. Maybe.
The censors haven't quite gotten it to it.
Yes. All right, so Paul, why don't you lead us off with your first guess?
Okay, so I feel pretty good I'm going to get off the schneid here. My guess for Andrew is going to be Final Fantasy 3 or Final Fantasy 6, depending on how you want to count it. I know that Andrew's a bit of a stickler sometimes when it comes to his naming conventions, so I'm going to cover my bases there.
I think he and I discussed this off-air a while ago, and I thought we had agreed it's 2 and 3 because that's what they were released for during this generation.
Yeah, but in America it was. And then for Travis, I'm going to go with Chrono Trigger. And so, Andrew, now let's hear your guesses.
Okay, so for Paul, I'm going with a generic pick because I had a hard time getting too deep. Because
I'm a generic kind of guy.
Yeah, Paul's generic. Yeah, we know.
Also, you know, last generation, you kind of shocked me with Super Mario Bros. 3 being your personal favorite best. And it's like, okay, yeah, I can see it being really good, but really?
The best game of the generation, shocker.
It was a good game, but it surprised me a little bit.
Didn't Travis pick it too?
More generic this
year. Yes.
Yes.
So did Fred Savage and the Wizard. Come on. You can't.
And like millions of American children.
It's a good game. I'm not saying it's not a good game. I just don't think it was the best game
of
that generation.
30,000 copies.
Yeah. Like, what did you pick again? Like a game that we hadn't even heard of?
I had heard of it.
So we're rehashing old ground. The answer for Paul is Super Mario World.
Ooh, controversial.
For Travis, I'm going to go with, I know that you really enjoyed the job class in Final Fantasy V, which is awkward because it is Final Fantasy V, because it didn't release in America at this time, which is why it's such a difficult pick for it. But I know that this was a good fit for you, and so I'm sticking with it because it is a Super Nintendo game, and I could very well be wrong here. We'll see how this one goes. It could backfire.
All right. So for my guesses, for Paul, despite the fact he's wearing a Link shirt right now, yeah, as we're recording.
Yeah. Once we started recording, I was like, oh, I have messed up horribly.
He trashed Legend of Zelda so much last episode, though.
I did.
And he maybe gave us a foreshadowing. So I'm actually stealing Andrew's guess from the first episode, and I'm guessing Tetris for Paul. And then for Andrew, I think you got the wrong Final Fantasy for him, Paul. I think he went with Final Fantasy 2 / 4. So apparently we each think a different Final Fantasy game fit another person.
Watch us all be wrong.
All right, so that's our guesses.
We have all the Final Fantasies on the system covered, so that's pretty cool.
No, we don't have Mystic Quest.
Well, yeah.
And there's ones on Game Gear, Game Boy. There's 3 Final Fantasy Legends and Final Fantasy Adventure.
Okay, most fun with friends. So I want to preface this a bit with, I had a little bit of trouble with this generation because
you had no friends.
I had no friends. No, the entire generation, actually, because the big heavy hitter computer games that I consider classics really hadn't come out yet. And
they were next generation. When I was looking at computer games, I was like, ooh, that one. No, that's next generation. No, next generation.
Yeah, the next generation is loaded with some good PC games. And I actually didn't own a Super Nintendo until the generation was kind of dying out. Like, early on, I didn't have a Super Nintendo, which is a little weird for... usually, I have one of the consoles early in the generation. So I felt a little late for a lot of these games. But to me, there was one obvious answer for the game that was most fun with friends, and that is Super Mario Kart. I can't tell you how many times that I played that, both racing friends and in battle mode with those balloons and shooting red turtle shells at each other, and just literally like jumping up and trash talking when you won a race, or, you know, wanting to throw down your controller in a rage when you got blue turtle shelled or whatever right before the end line. Although I'm not even entirely sure if the blue turtle shells were
not in the first.
Okay, yeah, I could be. That's one of the hard things with Super Mario Kart is that there's been, or I guess Mario Kart in general, there's been so many different versions. It's hard to keep track of which ones had whatever. I think I always looked forward to playing Mario Kart with friends, and it never got old. So this is my clear-cut pick for fun with friends.
Now, what's weird for me is I think I actually played the first Mario Kart. I think I played it solo more than I probably wound up playing it multiplayer, I think.
Interesting.
But it was also a game where I started inventing Game Genie codes for. Because there was a Game Genie code that you could play as... You could, like, change Koopa Troopa to be brown like Donkey Kong or something. I don't know. Or something. And so my friend and I decided, well, let's start changing some of these digits and see what happens, and just like see all the weird random sprites that you could race as.
I don't know if I'm sure I have played it single player, but I certainly don't remember ever playing it single player. It's a game that just screams like competing with friends to me. It almost seems pointless playing it by yourself.
Especially since
it's a party game on wheels.
Yeah. I don't think it had unlockables or anything. So yeah, so no. I made a joke about you having no friends. I was the sad child apparently at home playing this. Although, I don't think I owned it. So how did I play it single player? Maybe I'm misremembering it, and I only played a multiplayer.
Blockbuster Video.
No, it wasn't Blockbuster. It was the local rental shop, and we were probably fighting over the copy. I think I rented that same video game multiple times. I'm going to reiterate what Paul said, because my pick for best fun with friends for the generation is also Mario Kart, and for many of the same reasons, but more. The biggest issue, though, is that this was such a hard generation to pick a co-op fun with friends kind of game, because as much as Mario Kart is a great example of it, and there are a couple others that were games I played with my friends, by and large, this generation's best games were the ones where I was off by myself playing alone. Not because I preferred it, but because that was the experience. And even the single-player games, unless it was a head-to-head kind of thing where I had a couple of those that we may talk about later on, were fighting through that process. Ooh. Most of it was single-player where if we're playing together, I'm going to play a bit, and then I'm going to hand the controller off and you play a bit, rather than something we were both being able to play at the same time. Mario Kart was something you could both play at the same time, and it was so innovative, and it has been iterated upon so well. But if you go play Super Mario Kart today, it's still incredibly good. It holds up all of its value and is still very fun and has all of the things you would expect from a Mario Kart, and it works. It just works, which goes to show you how successful Nintendo can be at making games with a high level of polish when they go for it. I definitely did play it co-op a lot, but I definitely also, like Travis was saying, I played it a lot single player, and I played it single player by myself to get all the cups on all the characters and just get really good at it, and then go back and trounce my friends when I played with them the next time.
Did you say you played it co-op?
Well, I mean, no.
Okay.
It's definitely not co-op. Okay. It was a co-op experience where we're playing together rather than, you know, a single player pass the controller kind of experience.
Gotcha.
You're playing at the same time. But it's definitely not a co-op game. You're right.
And this is leaping ahead generations, but, I mean, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is the first reason we bought a Switch. So, although I skipped pretty much most of the other Mario Karts between the first one and that one, but they were also on a lot of systems I didn't own. So, my pick for most fun with friends is, and there's two different versions, which I ran into a fair amount on some of these games. So, I'm kind of lumping them together, though, because they're basically the same game. It's NBA Jam and NBA Jam Tournament Edition. So, especially,
you're on fire.
Yeah, I mean, especially if we're counting the arcade, because I have memories of, I mean, it's why I grew up a Knicks fan in the 90s, was playing as Patrick Ewing and John Starks in this game and dominating other people, unless they played as Shaq and Penny. But yeah, like, and then having this at home, and you could put in the multi-tap and play it four player, and yeah, just the shoes and the tournament edition had like the crazy modes where you could like dunk it from half court to get special points and all that stuff. It was, I remember playing this game so much. That's my pick for most fun with friends. I don't really have too much to say about it, but
I know of it, but I don't think I've ever actually played it, so I don't have a whole lot I can say about it either. I mean,
but
it's
even
got
you,
those iconic moments.
I'd say even you knew, like, the He's on Fire, and, like, I don't know if this is the game where Boom Shakalaka came from, but it certainly is what popularized that phrase.
I'm a little surprised nobody picked Tetris. I mean, all the talk about Tetris from the last generation, and maybe that's where it belongs, but...
To me, Tetris was, especially in this generation, was pretty much a solo, because who actually game linked their Game Boys together all like enough to okay
I'm raising my hand
yeah but I had it, but I probably used it a grand total of like twice. I don't know, I can't remember any Game Boy games I played multiplayer.
Fair.
We've all done most fun with friends, so now we're already on to best story.
Okay, so this one I feel like is maybe my worst pick, and not because I don't think it fits the category very well, but because I honestly don't know if I played it enough to judge, but I'm going with Final Fantasy III / Final Fantasy VI. I did play it to get to the world ending part of it. I think you both know what I'm talking about, where the...
I think... I don't know. Are we actually worried about spoilers for games in these generations?
I intend to spoil a game, because I thought about how I could possibly tell my story without spoiling it. I was like, no, I can't possibly not spoil the game but when it comes up. So there will be spoilers for various games coming up at some point. We're talking about games from the fourth generation, and, you know, if in Final Fantasy VII is a spoiler for you, then...
No!
You know, I think you are safe to turn us off now after screaming at me for a while. Anything else, you're probably safe to go, because honestly, we're talking about games that are still released, generally speaking, between 1988 and 1992, 30 years ago.
Especially since Nintendo is jerks and won't re-release them at least on the Switch Virtual Console. So it's virtually impossible to play these without legal gray area.
I agree with you mostly. But I will say, we did get some feedback on some of our earlier movie podcasts, where someone was fairly upset over, particularly me, because I was by far the biggest offender. And I re-listened to some of these podcasts. It's definitely all me. Would be routinely spoiling these movies. And I actually thought about it somewhat, and I realized that maybe we should try to avoid it when possible. I'm not saying, like, obviously, Andrew, if you need to tell it for your story, that's fine. But listening to those podcasts, I'm like, you know what? What's the point of these podcasts if not to, like, tell people, hey, here's a movie that you may have missed that we think is really good. Maybe you should watch it. And then I'm being the giant jerk here and being like, you should watch it. And by the way, here's how it ends. Right? So,
okay, yeah. You get a
point. I'm going to argue with myself from, like, 5 minutes ago and say, like, I'm going to try and avoid spoiling it. And I'm just going to say that.
So just bleep out Andrew saying what happens in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I'm gonna we'll retroactively go back and bleep that out. I didn't beat Final Fantasy III, so that's part of why I'm. It's a little hard for me to pick this game, but I played enough of it to have a couple of holy crap moments where things would happen in the game that I'm like, I didn't expect it to happen, right? And there's a lot of compelling characters, a lot of compelling story there. And so, yeah, that's pretty much all I'm going to say without trying to delve into spoilers too much. There's a lot of stuff that happens in that game, and I think it, to me, it's, and I didn't play Final Fantasy II, so maybe that's my bad there, but it really kind of established Final Fantasy as having a compelling story and compelling characters and twists that I didn't really get from Final Fantasy I, right? Final Fantasy I is like, oh, these faceless like fighter and white mage and black mage, and they didn't have names, and they're out to save the world, and that's kind of about it. And
since we just put spoilers off the table, we can't delve into maybe why Final Fantasy I, but yeah, I mean, there were some neat notions in it, but yeah, it's much harder to convey it in a Nintendo game than a Super Nintendo game too.
Yeah, and yeah, it just, I don't know, I felt much more of a connection with the characters and their stories in this game than I did in pretty much any other game of this generation. So that's my pick.
The fact that they have names instead of yes, fighter, red mage,
that does help. Yeah,
although you read 8-bit theater and then fighter and red mage just become their names, and that's what they're named.
But they have characteristics and personality that the game does not imbue upon them. Correct. Because they're their Mary Sue style protagonist. They can take on any personality you want because it's not about who the protagonist is. They're the stereotypical silent protagonist.
Yeah, do they even talk in Final Fantasy I? I don't think they do. Like, I don't think anyone talks.
No, well, no, you talk to villagers and innkeepers.
They talk to you.
Yeah.
The king and the bad guy and everything. Yeah. But...
yeah.
Says the guy who's wearing a Link shirt. Come on, now.
Hey.
Complaining about characters not talking.
I didn't pick it as the best story now, did I?
All right, Andrew, what's your best story?
Listen.
That's Next Generation.
Yeah. So, Paul, are you cribbing my notes or am I cribbing yours?
Because wow, you're going to be right twice in a row?
This has never happened in the history of this podcast.
No, it hasn't.
The best story for this generation is Final Fantasy III/6.
That's a point for me.
And yes, it is. The story is not just, you know, epic in its scope. You know, it has the great clash of civilizations. It has magic versus machines. It has an intense, important band of characters. 14 playable characters, which is unprecedented. And even to this day, you don't have anything like it. Not just, okay, you have 14 characters. The vast majority of them are complex, deep, have their own subplot lines that are important and meaningful, and you can engage with them or not. This is stuff that, you know, video games these days are still having struggles with, fitting all this kind of stuff into an RPG. And Final Fantasy III/6 did it in 1994, which is why it's so complicated talking about this generation of Super Nintendo being 1998 to 1992, because really, Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy III, is so much further ahead of some of these other games because it came out later. It is so good because of that. It has the advantage. This is where a console gets some extra power in this kind of discussion. But that's not going to take away from this game in particular. Final Fantasy III/6 is a masterpiece. It is quite possibly the best Final Fantasy game. It is so well done that I still enjoy every minute of it, and even derivative works on it. I watched someone play for hours on YouTube a My Little Pony spinoff where they've got the ROM and they basically Game Genie'd it and put My Little Pony sprites into it and changed the storyline, and it was still incredibly engaging. And I'm not a My Little Pony fan.
No,
so
Brony.
This game has so much going on that it can support that kind of thing, that kind of new storytelling, that kind of new artwork, while still being incredibly powerful and moving.
All right, Travis, you're gonna disappoint us all with picking something different.
You're gonna sweep the category. It's Final Fantasy III/6.
Nice.
It's hands down the best story. It's like one of the best stories ever of any generation, pretty much. Like, and like Andrew said, 14 characters, and like you care about every one of them. Like during the credits, not spoiling anything, but like during the credits when they're showing like how their stories end, but like even just like their symbols coming up, like, you know. Like in particular something like Shadows, I don't know if you guys remember the credits very much, but like how Shadows sequences in the even just introduced, like the apple coming up on screen, and you're like, oh, you know, and all that, and like, what other game could make you care about like Gao and Remy and like Setzer and all these other characters that like aren't normal?
You can even care about Umaro, and no one cares about Umaro, but you can.
Yeah, and Gogo and all these characters that like, it's more than just, yeah, Terra and Locke and stuff, and it's not spoiling anything to say names. The whole, I guess, world pivot at the midpoint of the game is way more drastic than the similar thing from Link to the Past. Trying to be vague here to not give stuff away, well, but
I think it's also important to know that story is not just protagonist; it's also a villain.
Oh yeah,
everyone loves Sephiroth, but Kefka is just so much better.
Well, and like his battle is epic, but then like the villains, yeah, like facing Ultros is like
he's such a great
even
character.
He's a memorable villain in this game. Like yeah, like, and then this is probably like one of the first games where I probably ground every character up to level 99.
And all of the Materia too, or I don't, it's not Materia, it's the
Magisite.
I can't remember Magisite, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the Magisite. Yeah, but like from the very, and this isn't even like a spoiler because it's the first scene, but like from the first scene when you're Terra and you're guiding the Magitek armor, you're like, oh, this feels different than anything that's come before this when you're playing that. Now, granted, I had not played Final Fantasy II at that point, so I've always felt a little bad for Final Fantasy II that I played 3 first, and then you go back to 2 and you're like, eh, this isn't really special. It's a paladin, it's a dragoon, they go to the moon, sorry. So, yeah, but this is, I think we've all waxed poetic long enough on this game that this is, I don't know. To me, you can't have too much argument over this one.
Nope.
Final Fantasy 3/6 sweeps the category for best story.
Amazing. That might be the only time that happens.
It's probably going to be the only sweep, especially in a category.
Across an entire generation.
Yeah. Just scrolling through the list when I was doing it, I was like, no. I mean, there are other games that have good stories, but nothing to this level.
There are some games that could have competed. I may talk about some of those later on, but I think Final Fantasy 3/6 wins out.
Yeah. Because, like, especially I still remember the story for this one. The other ones, maybe, like, in the moment, yeah, sure, like, A Secret of Mana or something like that might have had a more impactful maybe in the moment. I don't know. I'm just throwing that one out because it's another Square game. But anyway, we've talked long enough about best story. Paul, what's the best music?
Best music. Okay, so here's where we're going to fit in the game that Andrew picked for me last generation, Tetris. Because who can forget? Exactly. I think all three of those songs are burned into my memory permanently, and I will never forget them. This was a contender for playing with friends because I did have the cable that I connected with other people's Game Boys and would compete a little bit. But just more than that, like, it was just great music that somehow never got old. It was an earworm as the moment you heard it, you could remember it. You could, like Travis showed, you could recite it on command. And yet it's still never got annoying, and it's pretty incredible. And
it evokes Russia without being like insensitive about it somehow or something. I don't know how to phrase that, but you know, like, it sounds like,
It does sound Russian, even though I have no idea if it should. Like, maybe it's just because I associate it with Tetris and I associate Tetris with Russia.
Right. I mean, that's probably why. Like, because the title screen had the onion cap towers, whatever their actual name is.
Moving swiftly along.
But anyway, let's do the other sweep. Tetris for best music. Andrew, go.
Paul. No.
No.
Tetris has 2 songs.
No, 3.
3.
They're iconic. 3. And important, but my version had 2, so
what version were you playing? Pirated version?
The NES version.
The unlicensed Tengen version, yeah.
I think I had the real version, but I only remember 2 songs. Either way, you're wrong. It's not that you're wrong just because it's, you know, only these 2 songs, and it is iconic. You're not wrong. The best music is not Tetris. The best music, I had to go and say that it was Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger has the best music. It has also fantastic story and could possibly have won for best story. And Final Fantasy 6-3 could have won for best music. these two games were both so strong in both of those departments that it was really a coin to flip either way. But in the end, I'm saying Chrono Trigger has the better music and Final Fantasy 3-6 has the better story. The music in Chrono Trigger, it's evocative and flows really well. It sets the scenery so well, and it is unique. It is almost orchestral in a way that you don't see in a lot of these video games at this time, and still holds up. You can listen to the soundtrack today and say, "Yeah, okay, cool." The song, the leitmotif for Shala, still very, very impressive even to this day. So, Chrono Trigger's music, all around fantastic. Some really excellent tracks in there, and a great game worthy of it for a variety of reasons.
Can you hum some of the music on command like Travis did with Tetris?
Well, if I were a better musician, I might be able
that's
to.
That's what I thought. No. That's what I thought.
See, I don't, and I love Chrono Trigger, but I can't even recall, fine, the boss fight music, since I won't spoil the boss name. I'm sure.
I can't remember the boss fight music either.
I'm sure if I went back and listened to someone, it'd be like, oh yeah, but like when I listen to like video game symphony performances or orchestra performances, whatever the difference is, if they get to like the Chrono Trigger or God forbid the Chrono Cross medley, I'm like, yep, I don't remember any of this stuff.
Well, what do you remember?
I do remember Paul's shirt. This is Link to the Past. These are the versions of the songs that I remember. Like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Like, I don't remember, like, the NES version of that song. I remember this version. Or even just, like, I even just recently brought it up on Switch. And even just the, like, this isn't sound effects, but it's music, but like even just the sound effects and the music of like the Triforce coming together to pieces on the menu screen, and then dun 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 dun, dun ching, and like I'm like, this is where Zelda music came from me. And yeah, I'll just randomly be singing I guess it's the overworld theme or main theme or whatever it's called, and even if it was just that one song, like that's more that's enough. But like the fairy music, I can't sing that one, Paul, sorry. But like the fairy music is iconic to me. Like, you know you're coming into fairies, and like, and again, I keep jumping ahead to the Switch, but like to hear some of those themes weaved in or woven into Breath of the Wild is amazing, and to see how these songs have evolved over the years. Which, to Tetris's credit, yeah, like they've kind of stayed the same. I think they've probably been upgraded. I'm sure, like, if I played a modern version of Tetris, there's, like, techno-y versions of it or something. I don't know. Yeah, so Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past is my vote for best music.
So how wrong is Travis there, Andrew? Since you were talking about how wrong I was about Tetris.
He's less wrong than you are.
Okay.
That's right. My game had more than two songs.
And there is some iconic sound design as well. I'm not sure, I'm convinced, but I don't think he's got a valid opinion.
I have an invalid opinion.
Yeah, and like I said, this is music, not sound effects. That would be a totally different category. But yeah, even just like the dun 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 dun, like that little music when you open. Yeah. Thank you, Vinny. or the cha-ching when you pick up a root. Like, it all just comes together in my head for me that this is where all the sound effects and music and everything for Zelda come from for me. So, all right. Speaking of what we remember the most, Paul, most memorable.
Most memorable. So, the game that I was going to pick here was a contender for a couple different categories, including my favorite of the generation, but also favorite music. Travis, you picked the wrong Legend of Zelda game for favorite music. You should have been picking Link's Awakening. And Link's Awakening
centered around music too.
Yeah, and I had a hard time figuring out where to put this game because, like I said, it could fit a lot of places. But ultimately, I went with most memorable because this is probably it is without a doubt my favorite Legend of Zelda game, and I just love. I guess it's this combination of the story and the music, really. It's kind of haunting because as you're playing the game, and I'm not going to... this is a bad generation to choose not to spoil things. But as you're playing the game, you start to learn things about the world that you're living in and the people that you've interacted with and grown connected to that is a little sad. And when the game ends, it's kind of a triumphant ending because you've slain the bad guy and saved the world in a way, but you've also lost a lot. And I have very clear memories of, and I think the music of this game really boost it, because I have very clear memories. I can remember the music playing and some of the visuals at the ending of the game as certain things fade away and then, you know, other things happen. Man, this is getting incredibly vague, but it's just
you're okay, Paul. I have absolutely no idea.
Okay, but yeah, Travis is like nodding along and you just look really confused.
One of our original categories to peek behind the curtain was most pathos. Mm-hmm. This game probably would have been up there for me for most pathos because of all the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's probably one of the first games I've beaten where at the end I was like, man, I'm kind of a little sad. Like, I'm not like excited that I beat. I was excited about it that I beat the game, and I was really happy about playing the game, and I wanted to play it again. But also, I was just like, I'm a little sad with that, how the outcome of the game was.
The price of victory is it's weighs heavy on you when you're a preteen like that and you're playing that game and you're expecting to just go off and beat Ganon and save the princess.
Exactly. You're expecting to go out and slay the bad guy, save the princess, save the world, and everything is happily ever after. And it's kind of like one out of three, maybe, that you accomplish out of those things. I mean, you kind of slay the bad guy. But the other two are a little bit more questionable about whether, or the other three, I guess, depending on how you're counting, whether they actually get accomplished.
Your princess is in another castle.
Yeah. And so it's, I don't know, it's stuck with me all these years, and that's all I'll say.
Since Andrew's clearly never played the game.
Never played anything Zelda since the NES. I played both of them on the NES, and since then I've basically not touched the series.
Yeah, Zelda 2 turned you off that much, huh? All right.
No, it was fine. I like Zelda 2. I like Zelda 2 better than I like the original.
Controversial take. All right.
Yeah, it certainly is. I understand that.
This is not my pick for memorable, so I'm going to piggyback on Paul a little bit. But none of this is a spoiler, because this is all, like, ancillary stuff. But, like, just stuff like you could steal from the shop.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, or, like,
attacking the chickens, and then all of a sudden the chickens swarm you. Did you ever do that?
I mean, that was in Link to the Past as well, okay. I think. But yeah, there's characters from another game that are included in this one.
Okay.
If you remember.
Okay, I'm drawing a blank, but I'll have to think about it more.
There's a Chain Chomp, at least.
Okay, yeah, yeah. If you want that. That's right.
Like, yeah, and there's, he's not the only one that shows up.
Yeah.
So, like, just stuff like that was cool, and, like, it actually got 2D side-scrolling right in points, unlike Zelda 2. So, and then just, yeah, the items were neat. And yeah, I'd kind of forgotten about the music, but I certainly remember the game was music-based.
Oh, the music was key to me, yeah.
To me, more so even than Ocarina of Time. I know Ocarina of Time gets all the credit for being, like, you know, music is a key part, because, yes, you have to play the ocarina to do certain things in the game and stuff, but yeah, like, this was... the plot of the game hinges on the music.
Yeah, I mean, I think it introduces the ocarina, and the whole plot is you're going around and collecting these instruments, and as you collect the instruments, it plays different parts of the song, and once you can get all the instruments together, you get a pretty beautiful song. It's a song that I will not grace you all with my rendition of it, but it's because it's not as easy to hum as Tetris music, but it's a pretty beautiful song.
It's eight instruments. Yeah, it's also eight instruments mixed together.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all the feels.
All right, Andrew. Most memorable, and it better be right.
Well, the most memorable moment in this generation, and that's going to be a moment because it's not just the game. The game itself is fantastic and very memorable, but it has to come down to this moment. And congratulations, Travis. You get a point. It comes from Final Fantasy 2/4.
I knew you were a Final Fantasy 2 guy.
I love this series, and it feels so bad to have two games from the same series on this list. I tried really hard, but if I had to pick two games from any generation that are so meaningful to me as a gamer, you cannot pick many games better than Final Fantasy 2/4 and 3/6. These games were super impactful on me as a youth gamer in changing how I felt about games, in spending all of my time playing it. I called out sick to play both of these games in school. You know, I was like, nope, I refuse to do it. Nope, I got a fever. I am going to stay home. And I can't remember the name of the character, but there's the four fiends in Final Fantasy IV who are, you know, secondary villains. And the water-based one, I remember specifically that I was homesick, in air quotes, that one day when I finally beat him. But it wasn't until much, much later in the game. This is that spoiler moment that I was going to...
I was going to say, you're going to spoil a very important moment.
Because when we were talking about the pathos, as Travis was mentioning earlier, the most important part of this game for me was you're on your way to try to beat the bad guys, and suddenly the walls are all caving in around you. You've sprung a trap, and the walls are literally coming in around you, and some party members are going to sacrifice themselves to save you. And
okay, not the moment I was
it came as such a shock to me, because, you know, I'm playing this as a kid still, and we're kid emotions. We're not used to these things. We're used to just, okay, we're invincible. Okay, we die. We got Phoenix feathers. Okay, we didn't succeed. We reload. We get through the sequence and they're gone. And it's like, okay, wait a minute. We have outs for this. We have magic that can fix this. And your most powerful magic user casts a spell that's going to fix this. And it doesn't work, because it's not a story, but it's also because that's not how this thing is going to work. They did it for the purpose of saving you. They had to do it, and they chose to do it, so the spell isn't going to work, because they don't want to come back. And I broke down crying, because I couldn't handle losing characters like that, because it had never happened to me before. And for that kind of experience, Final Fantasy II remains one of my favorite games ever, because it helped me to grow as a person, to understand that it's not just the story about the triumphs. Sometimes it's the story of the losses. Now, it has all these other cool features along the way. It's a fantastic game. But that moment crystallizes, Final Fantasy crystals, everything about the game and the series for me. And it is why Final Fantasy 2-4 is my favorite Final Fantasy, even though objectively Final Fantasy 3-6 is a better game.
There are two other massive character moments in that game with two of the more main characters
so,
of the game.
You know, you've got...
Which, again, Paul, this was a terrible generation to turn off spoilers.
But... Sorry, you don't have to do the same thing I'm doing.
Cecil has his path to redemption, which is obviously, you know, the main plot line throughout. So that's the big one. His path and choice to try and redeem himself from what he's done in the past. And... Kane and his path, and whether or not he is worth you or not is a big question. But there's even more than that. You have Tella's journey, and whether or not he is doing the right thing by trying to, you know, chase down his quest for magic to get revenge. You know, that's his motivator. He wants revenge, and then as he gets the power, is he actually going to use it for good? You have the bard, Rydia, and her story. Rydia. You have Edward and his story. You have Edge, the spoony bard.
Spoony bard!
Which is... not a true translation, but it is so good. It's the translation as far as I'm concerned. But no, that's not what it was supposed to be. But they couldn't publish censor wise what it was originally, so we didn't get the full version.
It would not have been as iconic.
That's the thing. Sometimes a good translation that follows the rules of censorship can be more creative because of it, especially because how powerful the spoon is in that game.
Exactly. That's another memory. Yeah, all right. You guys have made me remember a lot more about those two games, too. So mine, the game itself, this is where I mentioned up front, most memorable can be interpreted how we want to. So my game, the game is memorable. I still remember it. I've played iterations of it. But there's two specific moments involved with it. So the game is the first original Street Fighter II, the World Warrior. So the two memories, which I'm glad we're including arcade, is playing it in the arcade on coming back from a school field trip to Philadelphia. We stopped at a huge rest area, because I have just recollection of a huge, vast food court and everything, and they had arcade, and it was the first time any of us had ever seen this game. And I played as Dalsim, and since no one had any idea what they were doing, and both of you hopefully know what Dalsim, like, he stretches his hands and feet across the screen. I played for many, many matches, probably the most matches I've ever played in a row in the arcade on that game because no one else knew what they were doing.
They couldn't get close
to you. That memory has stuck with me of, like, yeah, just the sensory memories of the location we were in and seeing this game and, like, playing that character and playing this new game because I'd never played a fighting game before. That was my first fighting game, which I think for a large part of the population was true as well. And then also, it's not the reason I own a Super Nintendo or owned a Super Nintendo, but it's why I got it when I did. Because back in our day, you could put things on layaway. And my mom put Super Nintendo and Street Fighter 2 on layaway at Kmart, which might not be around either. And, like, I think I went to school the next day and, like, told one of my friends and, like, I don't want to say they made fun of me, but, like, they already had a Super Nintendo. So they did something that kind of, like, annoyed me so much that I went home and I said, Mom, you're getting that Super Nintendo. Like, I need to play this game.
Wow. Demanding.
So I have no idea if that means, I don't know if layaway had a fee associated with it or what. So we technically paid more than we should have. But yeah, like, that was, so that's my first Super Nintendo game. And it's why I got a Super Nintendo and then why I got to play, like, Mario Kart and Final Fantasy 3 and 2 and all these other games on it. So I probably would have got it eventually, but that's my memory. So, and then just playing the game just was fantastic too. And, like, all the things you do as a preteen boy, like, oh, can we get Chun-Li's skirt to flip up so we can see anything? Like, cause she's the only girl in the game, which she was in Street Fighter 2.
Street Fighter 2.
Oh, really?
Street Fighter 2.
Okay, yeah.
She was. This is the original eight characters: Ryu, Ken, Guile, E Honda, Chun Li, Zangief, Blanka,
Dalsum?
And.
Oh, shoot, you didn't say Dalsum. I just mentioned
Dalsum.
Dalsum, yeah.
Ironically.
Ironic that I didn't name Dalsum, yeah. Well, and then obviously Balrog, Vega, Sagat, and M. Bison. And talk about mistranslations, like. Three of those characters got their names all scrambled from the original Japanese.
Well, that was on purpose, though, right?
That's because they didn't want to make Mike Tyson angry.
I mean, would you want to make Mike Tyson angry?
Not in 1992.
Yeah, especially not 30 years ago.
Came out when he was biting off of Vander Holyfield's ear. No, I don't think they wanted to. But it's fascinating that happened. And, like, I don't know if I assume almost at this point Japan flipped and that M. Bison, as we know him, is now M. Bison over there, too. I have no idea, honestly. But to me, that's who M. Bison is. But yeah, or like the punching and, like, yeah, I made a joke about blood. But, like, yeah, like punching people and, like, seeing them puke, basically, in this game, like, was new. But then, yeah, and then, you know, Blanka's a unique character and, like, you get to the bosses and you're like, oh, whoa, I can't even play as these characters. What is this? Like... And, like, Vega climbing on the fence is a totally, like, unique ability that no one else can do.
Yeah, these were not
anything,
the first
so.
Fighting games, but yeah. They were the first fighting games that really broadened the appeal by being high quality and innovative. They did stuff that no other fighting game was doing well, and they were intuitive. You could play them. And they invented things that people didn't expect. My recollection, this is not something I knew at the time, but I've been reading about it lately, is that it had this bug, essentially, where you could... continue combos or break combos if you had that 1 in 24 frames where it cycles things. If you press the button in that 1/24th of a frame, second frame, you could either continue your combo or break the other person's combo. I can't remember. But they're like, yeah, we could fix that, but we don't think it's that big of a deal because no one's going to be able to do it consistently anyway. And then it just spawns this entire highly competitive sport of being able to hit that 1/24th of a second moment and hit it consistently so that you can win those fights so effectively.
Yeah, like so much of this game has become like, if you tell another fighting game fan, you know, oh, it's the fireball motion, they know exactly what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Or like it's the hurricane kick or it's the dragon punch. Like, yeah, sure, those moves have been done in like thousands of other fighting games right at this point, but people still call them do a fireball, do a hurricane kick, do a dragon punch type of thing, or
charge moves or whatever else.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what a better name for the charge
move. I was so bad at those until Final Fantasy III. Final Fantasy III taught me how to do fighting moves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that character was... That's another very memorable character.
But I'm so glad you mentioned Street Fighter because I wanted to mention it for my friend with friends, but it didn't beat out Super Mario Kart for obvious reasons. But ultimately... It's like, well, I need to talk about it because it's such an important game for this generation. And it fell completely off my list because there just isn't enough room. So thank you for saving me from that.
My problem with particularly Street Fighter as well, but like a lot of fighting games, was the main friend I had to play with got so good at them that I'd never wanted to play them. At a certain point, I was like, there's no point in me trying to play you unless I get a brand new game that neither one of us has ever played and it's so different. But like Street Fighter was such a template for so many other games that if you knew Street Fighter, you could kind of pick up any other fighting game and do pretty well in it.
Yeah, I mean, Street Fighter 2 was on my Worthy of Discourse list for a lot of the reasons that Andrew mentioned. Like, it was, I played it a lot with friends. It was definitely revolutionary in its own way. It spawned so many sequels, including so many versions of Street Fighter. Like, I kept on waiting for them to make Street Fighter 3, right? It's like Super Street Fighter 2, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition. But it does have the problem that you mentioned, right? Like, that once you get good at fighting games, it's kind of, there's not a lot of room for other people to play against you. Like, they just keep doing combos. And it's like, well, this isn't very fun. And I do think that, kind of a spoiler for future generations, but I think games like Smash Brothers kind of refined it a little bit more for the casual crowd who, and even beyond the casual crowd, just for people of varying, like, skill levels, where it made it so that you could play against people who are better than you and still have fun. And that was the one flaw that kept Street Fighter 2, I think, off of any of the lists for me, is that you kind of need to be pretty good at it to have fun with it.
Well, and that's why it's my most memorable, because like I said, it's those two moments. It's the first time ever playing it in the arcade. I have a similar sense memory about playing NBA Jam for the first time on another, I think on another road trip for field trip probably or something. So I played a lot of memorable arcade games on field trips. So thank you, school.
That's what school's for.
But just one quick note, again, jumping ahead to the Switch, but like, if you can listen to people talk about Smash Brothers Ultimate and they are talking about it exactly the way people talk about Street Fighter and all those games, they're like down to the frames and like what moves you can do where and like how to edge guard and do this, and you can play it casually, but if you played against a tournament player, you would also lose.
Oh yeah, 100%. These games are high.
I understand what you mean. Like, if you play against a normal person, you're going to be able to have more fun playing a game like Smash Brothers. But that's the intent of Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. It's not really trying to be a tournament. Well, it is a tournament level. They made it into that, but it wasn't intended, I don't think, to be a tournament level game like this, or even Mortal Kombat or Samurai Showdowns or anything like that. Yeah, there was a lot of I played a lot of fighting games this generation when I was going through it. There was... But none of them were as memorable as Street Fighter II, the original. So, on to the biggest of the categories. Paul, your personal best of the Generation 4.
Yeah, so this is the second episode in a row where I wasn't super thrilled with my pick for my favorite. Like, I wasn't thrilled with Super Mario Brothers 3.
It's looking good.
Aww. Sorry, Andrew, it's not Super Mario World. I do think this is a really good game, and I had a lot of fun playing it. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It's Mega Man X. And I'll make the argument for it right here. It is such a great leap forward from the Mega Man games of the Nintendo era. In the Nintendo era, it was very formulaic, right? Like, you have like the 8 bosses, and you got your Mega Buster, you got your Slide, and and Dr. Wily's the bad guy. And that's pretty much it. Like, nothing different happened. There was... It was just different bosses and different levels. Mega Man X kind of changed everything. First of all, there's actually a story there, and I contemplated putting Mega Man X into the best story category because there's actually a pretty interesting story behind, like...
Is this with Sigma?
Yeah, it's with Sigma. It's in the future, like, robots, and there are robots that go bad, and then there are these Maverick Hunters that have to go hunt down the robots that go bad, and the Maverick Hunters go bad because Sigma, their leader, decides that they shouldn't be slaves to humans anymore. There's this whole... there's Zero that shows up to help you throughout the game, and your ex's interactions with him and what goes on between with him later on in the game. The bad guy isn't Dr. Wily. It is Sigma. It is a more nuanced villain, There's a lot more of mechanics. It's a very polished game, and I remember it might be in many ways like my favorite platformer, or at least the platformer that I felt like I never got super like it was challenging and I died a lot, but it never felt like the controls were unfair or like the level was unfair. It always felt like I could do it, and it was my own fault. It wasn't because the stupid thing didn't jump or whatever. It introduces dashes. It introduces scaling, being able to latch onto walls, and it just opens up a whole bunch of different level design ideas. It opens up the idea of all these different upgrades beyond the weapons that you get for defeating the enemies. Oh, by the way, the bosses—they're now not just like random adjective man. It's actually they're animals too, and their levels kind of represent the different animals, like Storm Eagle and whatever else. And there are armor upgrades that change the look of Mega Man and create, give you different abilities. Mm-hmm. There's just so many ways in which it's an improvement over the previous games. And it's just really solid, enjoyable game that I had a lot of fun in. And it's one of the... I beat a lot of the Mega Man games, honestly. But this one... I guess I was going to say it was one of the few ones I beat. But I guess I did beat a lot of them. But I don't know. Just... good solid game. So that's my pick, and I'm sticking to it, Andrew.
You're not going with the Super Mario World where it's just clean and good platforming all the way through, and it's got these great overworld. No, you're going with Mega Man. All right.
This is where me getting the Super Nintendo later in the generation probably hurts, because I went back to Super Mario World later, and I'm like, okay, this is fine, but it's nothing special. It wasn't revolutionary to me.
I think also, to me, Super Mario World was much more iterative on Super Mario 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had the overworld. It replaced the raccoon with
the cape.
A cape, yeah. I guess, a blanket kind of that you flew around with.
It wasn't nearly as revolutionary as Mega Man X was, in my mind.
The biggest thing Mario World gave us was Yoshi, right?
Yeah,
I think that's what it did. Yeah, it was much more iterative. And I didn't play much Mega Man, but I can see that there's a much more bigger leap forward in Mega Man X.
Yeah, I honestly can't complain about Paul's pick here. I don't think that Super Mario World, it's a good game, but it's not probably as good as Mega Man X, honestly. And I've not played Mega Man X, so there you go.
You should fix that.
No, I don't have time.
All right, fair enough.
All right, Andrew, what's your personal best
game? So the best game from this generation, wrong. Personal choice... was Civilization. Sid Meier's Civilization.
The original.
The first one?
The original.
Man.
A lot of people, apparently everyone, you two included apparently, like Civilization 2 better. You guys are wrong. The original Civilization, not only is it doing all the innovation of this idea, making this style of game, that it's a 4X kind of game, which... I don't know if this really started it, but it did it so well and really brought it out to people who wouldn't have seen it before if it did exist. But it basically didn't exist either. And the ability to build up your area in a strategic game, controlling your culture, your civilization throughout all of history into the future and win with a variety of different methods. So there's multiple outcomes that are acceptable. Really awesome stuff. And what did Civilization 2 do? It gave us spies. What? No. 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 Civilization is far and away the best Civilization here, and it spawns now 6 sequels that are consistently very good. I don't think anyone can deny that Civilization is a great game. In terms of how it ranks up for me, though, I had spent ungodly numbers of hours playing this on PC. And then it came out on Super Nintendo, and I had a copy on Super Nintendo, too. And I played it there. And I played Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution on the Xbox 360. And that has been about my experience, because, yes, I played Civilization 2, but it's nowhere near as good. I played more Alpha Centauri than I did Civilization 2.
Civilization, Alpha Centauri is good.
Alpha Centauri is very good. So, but Civilization is the best.
So not yet. We're obviously straddling several generations, then I talk about different civilizations, but to me the biggest difference is the leap forward in graphics from Civilization 1 to Civilization 2 alone makes me prefer Civilization 2.
He's a visual guy.
Apparently.
So I went with strategy games for both my top picks for Generation 3 and Generation 4.
Apparently. At least this is stronger than Mule.
We're less disappointed in you for this pick.
All right, Travis, what's your best?
It's also interesting that both the years are obviously were on consoles, because you just mentioned Civilization. I didn't even know it was on.
It got ported to Super Nintendo. I still have my copy. It's not nearly as good on the console.
Right, but like both of them were... Well, was Mule... I mean, Mule was originally some form of personal computer.
Yeah, it was first on the Commodore, I believe, and also was on the Amiga at some point, but I played it first on the NES.
Okay, because I was going to say, you've been the PC game representative so far. All right, my personal best...
Chrono Trigger.
What? Yes.
Is it?
Yes, it's Chrono Trigger.
Son of a gun.
I went all over the map on this pick, and like, Link's Awakening was in there for a little bit, honestly.
You made the right call, Travis. As someone who guessed Chrono Trigger for you.
Yeah, I'm delving a little bit into my worthy discourse, but yeah, Super Mario Land 2, six golden coins almost made it. But yeah, like, then I was like, well, wait. I played Final Fantasy 3 a bunch, but I played Chrono Trigger possibly just as much to get every single ending in this game, to try all the double techs, triple techs, do all the time travel, fine, slight spoiler, get Magus into your party and like see like Frog's story. Like we talked about the character, like sure, there's not 14 characters, but my God, I cared about every single one of these characters in this game. Like this, it's such a shame that it doesn't really have a worthy sequel, in my opinion.
You guys that's the Chrono Cross.
Lambast Chrono Cross. But I was even telling my wife on our walk this afternoon, I was like, sure, it got Chrono Cross, and apparently got some other game I've never even heard of in the Chrono series. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, they've never gone back to it. And Square is not one to leave a good property alone. So in a way, it's kind of shocking that they haven't gone back to that well again. So I don't know if like Square kind of recognizes like we're not going to get they're not going to get that dream team of developers and like Akira Toriyama at the height of his powers. Andrew's kind of rolling his eyes, maybe a little bit, the Dragon Ball Z artist. But, like, that was definitely, like, I can't even remember the Final Fantasy artist's name, even though he's far more prolific. Or
Amano?
Regarded. I shouldn't say prolific, because I'm sure Dragon Ball Z has more.
The character design, but he doesn't do the actual artwork, whereas I think
right.
More of the actual artwork was done in Chrono Trigger the way you're thinking it.
Right, and, like, that, I mean, that led me into actually trying the... Yes, I played Dragon Warrior, but, like, I also tried, what was it? I think they are calling it Dragon Quest in America by then, but Dragon Quest 7, 8? There's one of them where Toriyama did the art for that, and I was like, sure, I'm in. I'll try this game. But yeah, like, just all the stories and getting the characters and the weapons and, like, the unique gameplay, like, it was new. Like, that battle system was entirely new at that point. Like, we hadn't, like, it was starting to slide into, not to real time. It's not like a Final Fantasy 13 or something like that, but like it's much more dynamic even than Final Fantasy 3 with the bars filling and all that, and like you could see the enemies on the overworld. And but yeah, just this almost made it for best story, but Final Fantasy 3 is such a titan that it's hard to top that. But this probably, to me, because I came into Final Fantasy 2 so late, it didn't strike me as much, so that would probably be third in the story pantheon behind Final Fantasy 3 in this game, but and Chrono Trigger. But
no, it's I can't complain. This is a good choice for a great game. I love Chrono Trigger for a variety of reasons, and Square's decisions not to continue on with it, I think, have more to do with financial considerations. There isn't the same market for look at the games in this generation, and we haven't even hit all of them. We're gonna keep to a couple more in just a few minutes here.
We're gonna do some more.
But
yeah.
Final Fantasy 2 and 3, 4 and 6, Chrono Trigger, already mentioned. That's three powerhouse RPGs, massive single-player game investments where you sit down anytime. And it's not the style of gaming you have now, and the market isn't there for these kinds of games for whatever reason. They're not going to, they can't even get these games to be republished, let alone to get a sequel out. They can't even just re-release what they already have on the new systems, which is easy money. I mean, there are people who would happily pay $20, $30, $60 for a remaster, re-release of Chrono Trigger on the system of their choice. And some of them times they exist, but they're really hard to get sometimes. And it's surprising. And I think it does just mean that as much as these games were big and important to us in this generation, that's not where video gaming is these days.
Yeah, I also remember Final Fantasy III and Chrono Trigger and Ogre Battle being like the first games that like kind of sold out and were going, or like you could pay like $100 for them, which was unheard of back then.
I'm curious, how accurate is it to say that there's not a market for those types of games now? Because I look around and I see things like Elder Scrolls, like Skyrim being a huge seller, and you've got the Dragon Age games from BioWare, and Mass Effect was a huge hit.
But so you realize you're citing games that are almost a decade old, though.
Yeah.
Those are all pretty old.
Rather than the rule. We had many in a generation, all coming from the same company in different series. I mean, you had both Final Fantasy II and Final Fantasy III, but also Chrono Trigger, and also more that we'll talk about in just a few seconds. So it's all coming from the same company. One company nailing all this. You can't do that now.
Sure, but I mean, a decade old, but I mean, how old is Chrono Trigger, right? Like, you said they haven't made a sequel since. And Andrew's making the argument that there's no appetite for it. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like that's what you're saying.
No, I think that is an accurate assessment. I don't necessarily, I'm not happy about that. I wish there was, I have an appetite for it, but I'm one gamer. The game market doesn't have an appetite for it.
So, and it might just be targeted marketing on my part because I searched for it and stuff, but like, I mean, they're, and I don't think it's Square. Maybe it is. Like, there's a game right that just came out like last week when we're recording this called Bravely Default 2. Mm-hmm. That was like marketed as like, oh, this is the return to, yeah, like that style of RPG, or even right now it's called Project Triangle Defense is supposed to be like a return to Final Fantasy Tactics type of thing. So they're trying, and I think that one's Square. I don't know. I think they're still role playing games. Like Xenoblade Chronicles is supposedly insanely popular on Nintendo Switch.
There are hundreds of these games being made. Kemco releases RPGs in this style with broad stories that last 40 to 50 hours and have characters and mechanics that would throw back to SNES style RPGs all the time. It's not that they're not being made. They sell very poorly because the quality is not there. You know, it's not.
Well, also because of Fortnite. I mean, like, it's like games like that are what's captured.
Which was my point.
Damn, the kids these days.
The young. Yeah,
those get off our lawns.
Yeah, they want to shoot llamas or whatever the hell you do in Fortnite. I don't even know.
If you get the developers and put in the time and build the budget to make and innovate, it has to also be innovative because you can just do a SNES style sprite video game RPG for not a whole lot of budget. And even if you put good developers on and get great music, it still would not be all that interesting and probably wouldn't sell a whole lot of copies. You need something new, something to spice it up, and finding a way to do that on this style of game is actually quite hard, and I think maybe there's just less space for innovation in there. Or maybe we just haven't found the creative genius who's going to take it to the next level yet.
I mean, you can even just see that from even just from Square themselves. Like, it takes a long time for a new Final Fantasy numbered game to come out at this point.
It was over a decade between 13 and 15.
And 14 was an MMO.
Right, 14 was an MMO, and it was a long time between 12 and 13 too.
And 15, I don't know what the impression of, from what I got the impression of, it was sort of like starting to deviate a little bit too much from what made Final Fantasy Final Fantasy.
They're
at that
trying
point
to innovate, which is what I asked them to do. But the way they're innovating is by making it very action oriented, and it's still telling an interesting story, but it's no longer the same feel, and it doesn't feel like a Final Fantasy, at least to me, right? And so you lose me. But you might gain more audience. Yeah. But at the same time, it doesn't sell amazingly well. It sells fine. It did not bomb out, but it didn't sell nearly as well as they had hoped it would.
You basically have to be Persona in order to sell a lot as an RPG nowadays.
The market for RPGs, this was the heyday. This generation was the heyday. And these RPGs are still good. And to a certain extent, why even bother trying to make something better than these? Because Final Fantasy VI has the best story. Chrono Trigger's got a great story and great music. Final Fantasy II has the pathos, and there's still more to come.
Maybe it's nitpicky. I don't disagree that this might be the heyday, but I still don't know if I accept the idea that there's not an appetite for RPGs. When you look at, and I totally understand that certainly the cadence of releases has slowed down, but I think that's more of a, just all games right now take a lot longer. Like, we've gotten to the point where it's kind of like AAA game or like a complete indie game, and there's no in between, right? And a AAA game takes like millions of dollars and so many years to create what publishers hope will be a big hit. And And so, but you still have like stuff like Dragon Quest, Fallout, Elder Scrolls. There's still Final Fantasy games being created. Like there, Dragon Age. There's apparently a new Mass Effect coming out. Like, yes, it's not nearly as many and as rapid, but I think there are still people out there playing RPGs, and there's still big budget RPGs being made. So, anyway, we got off on a bit of a tangent. I don't even remember where
That's
we were.
Do best.
I just remember that Travis just gave me a point.
Well. I think the whole next rest of the episode is tangents, because we're onto the worthy of discourse section anyway.
Let's go.
Okay. So Street Fighter 2 was one of mine. I've already mentioned that. I don't have too much else other than to say Star Fox, because it was a fun game, and it was kind of revolutionary in the graphics, right? Like having the 3D. Like I know they whatever they called it. All things considered, it was actually kind of an ugly game. I mean, if you look back on it, it was kind of neat.
Oh, I just played it on the Switch like 2 nights ago, and I was like, yeah, this isn't necessarily as good as I remember it, but I still had fun.
Yeah, I think it was probably felt a little revolutionary just by virtue of like we hadn't seen a game kind of like that. But man, there were like no textures on any of those polygons and anything, and it was a step forward, I think, maybe technologically, but maybe not so much game-wise.
It's also most of my memories of Star Fox, the first one, have been overridden by my even more fond memories of Star Fox 64.
Yeah, and as with a lot of Nintendo games, some of the later games kind of blur together. Like when I incorrectly associated Blue Turtle Shell or Spike Shells or whatever it was with the first Mario Kart, and it was actually Mario Kart 64 or whatever it is. So there's that one. And the only other one I had to mention was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, The Graphic Adventure, which is one of those old Lucasfilm point-and-click kind of... LucasArts. Point-and-click kind of adventures for the PC. And I had that for the computer. And I remember playing it surprisingly a lot. And it was a pretty solid game. You'd be surprised by kind of like the different emotions that can be portrayed by a little pixelated Indiana Jones and his father and everything. And there were certainly some moments of frustration. I think it was one of those games where it's like, I think I probably have to buy the strategy guide, because I don't know that I'm supposed to use like the tape on the glass vase for whatever reason.
Do you mean, Paul, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis?
No, I do not. That was another game that I did play, but not nearly as much as it was a game based on the movie, The Last Crusade. And there were actually two different versions. I think there was like the graphic adventure, and then there was like the action adventure or something like that. I didn't play the other one.
I had to check this out because I had no idea the release dates of these games, and Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis was in 1992, so it falls within this wheelhouse, which is troublesome for me. What was the name of the other one? The one that you're talking about?
It's Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, The Graphic Adventure. It's based on the movie. It actually follows the plot of the movie pretty much exactly. So I guess it's a game based on the movie. I think the Fate of Atlantis was the original story, if I remember correctly.
So yours came out in 1989.
Yeah. So okay. Before Fate of Atlantis, and probably not as polished of a game, but I did spend a lot of time playing it, and I guess I'll say it's underrated. I don't really know if it's a great game. I'm sure it wasn't as good as like the Curse of Monkey Island and all those other games that are thought of more fondly, but I enjoyed it. And that's really all I have for Worthy of Discourse.
Wow, that's a short list, honestly.
I told you, this is a weak generation for me.
That's fascinating. I can fill you in some, because I have so many more than I'm allowed to have.
Yeah, I have a lot. I
didn't even think about Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis for whatever reason, and that one easily could have been on the Worthy of Discourse. I'll just mention that was then the next one in the series. I guess that LucasArts and... Yeah, no, guys, use my property, make another video game. And Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis is, I think, probably the pinnacle of that style of adventure game. Really good puzzles, solvable in a lot of different ways. Fantastic story. Nothing too complicated, so you didn't have to use a guide most of the time, but challenging enough. So that's fine. That's not even one of the ones I had on my list.
You're welcome.
So unfortunate. Thank you. Yes, because I wasn't thinking about it. It's like with Travis and having lost Street Fighter, because there was just so much going on this generation that was so important. So here's one that you guys didn't talk about that I think is really, really critical. I'm going to top this one off. Pokemon on Game Boy.
Yeah, I saw it listed a lot when I was going through, and I'm like, it probably should be mentioned, but I have never been a Pokemon person, and I was never a Pokemon person.
The only Pokemon game I've played is Pokemon Black on the DS, so I was not a member of this. Plus, this really tips the whole, yeah, it's on the Game Boy, but wasn't it like way after 1992 when like the years supposedly on this.
Yeah, it's tough. I understand, but I think it's actually pretty close. I played Pokemon Yellow, which was after Red Blue, so I played Yellow first, which was the same generation, but it was still released later on my Game Boy, so it was still on Game Boy at that point. But I think that it's probably fair to say that Pokemon really took off with Game Boy Advance or even Game Boy Color. But it was in this generation that it came out and started making some waves, in the sense that Game Boy in this generation. I think the dates also make a lot of sense. It was earlier than you guys reel.
Well, actually, I know we can do the math if somebody wants to do math. It was 25 years ago because they just, like, Pokemon Day was, like, literally last week, and it was 25th anniversary.
So that'd be 96, so that's pretty late. But, again, Final Fantasy III was about the same time period.
Yeah, right, yeah. And it's on the system, like... The years are more for the PC games.
Yeah, which is unfair to PC sometimes, but it's how we've set things up.
And even though I didn't play them, I was like, somebody needs to talk about Pokemon, because like it's way too important to not be there, even if I've never personally played it.
So another one that is very important to talk about as a game that's helped define a lot of moments. How about SimCity? SimCity is another PC game that came out in this generation. It came out in 1991 or 1992. I didn't write down the notes for it. There are more Sim games that came along in other Sim cities. SimCity, the very first one, completely revolutionized how management games.
Yeah, I spent a fair amount of time playing SimCity.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the ones I've played somehow on PC. I don't think I owned it on PC, but I probably played it like in Radio Shack or at my friend's store or something, but played it on the Super Nintendo. But I played Sim Ant probably way more than I ever played Sim City.
Interesting.
I don't know what drew me to Sim Ant, but I loved that.
It has to have been later. I played another game more than any other Sim City in another generation. I don't know if it's going to make my list because I haven't done the list yet, but so I'll save it for that generation as a worthy of discourse, certainly. But some RPGs. We were talking about this being the heyday of the RPGs. Square is responsible for all the ones we've already discussed for the most part, plus Secret of Mana, The Secret of Evermore, not spin-off, completely different series, same company, really confused a lot of people because of that, had a lot of similar battle sequences. Not Square, we have Earthbound, and we have Super Mario RPG. Surprisingly strong. It's like Nintendo and is like, we got to get Mario in on this RPG heyday. Can we do that? Yeah, boss, we can do that. And they come out, and it's amazing. It's really, really solid.
And graphically, didn't it use like a similar engine to Donkey Kong Country, so it looked like... super advanced.
Yeah, I mean, Donkey Kong Country blew people's minds with the level of graphics and music that they did. We talk about music. This one Donkey Kong Country could have made it for music, but the platforming was incredibly fluid, and the graphics were fantastic. Again, it can't even fit it into my worthy of discourse list because it's too long. Because I still have Ogre Battle, which Travis mentioned.
Yep. March of the Black Queen.
It is possibly one of it's one of the most viable SNES cartridges around, because it is so hard to get a hold of, because everyone wants it, and there are so few copies made, and it was just a complete misunderstanding of how popular this game would be, even now.
Yeah, like I said, that was one of the first games I remember like not being able to find. I was like, wait, what? I'm here at EB Games, I can't just buy it? What do you mean?
How do you not have 100 copies up there? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ogre Battle easily could have been my pick for most memorable, if Final Fantasy II's Force memorable moment hadn't been so strong. Because my memories of playing Ogre Battle with my friends, and yes, it's a single-player game, but it was the experience that I was playing it, my friends were there, and we were doing it together, was so impactful as well. And that is one of the reasons why Ogre Battle still remains so important to me, even though I never owned a copy myself. They owned the copy, and I got to borrow their copy. How about one more? Tetris Attack. This is puzzle to panel. It's the style of sliding puzzle that allows us to have Pokemon Puzzle League in the N64 generation, Planet Puzzle League on the DS. It is a style of puzzle that I love. It's just super intuitive, and again, probably the most fun of these puzzle fighting games to play against people, because it has such a high skill cap, and yet it allows you to play with someone fairly easily, even if you're not very good. You know, you're not going to be punished the same way that you would be in Tetris or Dr. Mario, even.
Or Puyo. My God, I cannot play Puyo Puyo to save my life.
It's just something about the game is inherently balanced and flows so well. But if you set up the combos, you can just do incredibly insane things. And we have some friends who are really good at this, and I love playing with them, even when I was getting my ass handed.
Yeah, I was going to say, watching you guys play Pokemon Puzzle League in college, that was my, like, version of the fighting game. I was like, nope, you guys are way too good. I just, I'm not going to ever devote enough time to get good enough to put up any sort of a fight.
Well, to Andrew's point, though, like, even if you are not nearly as good as the person you're playing against, the game is set up in such a way that you can survive for a while by just trying to do simple things, and by surviving, you end up sending a lot of garbage to the other person, and that can kill them. Like, you have a chance. Like, you're not just going to... It's not like a fighting game where you're going to get completely dominated and, like, they'll be doing a combo and you just won't have a chance to do anything unless you know the super secret combo breaker. Like, it's one of those things where you can have fun and you can play for a while and have maybe a 20 to 30% chance of winning, even against somebody who's much better than you, which is nice.
It's also, from what I remember, it's also way more forgiving of mistakes than, like, say, Tetris. Like, Tetris, if you're off by one column, you're screwed.
Yeah.
While as that, it's like, oh, I flipped it? Oh, well, I'll just flip it back and go flip the two I actually meant to flip.
It's a little bit of a different mechanic, but there's basically kind of a delay before you die, so you have some time to...
But I just mean, like, it's really... You can undo your moves.
Yes,
yeah. As opposed to Tetris or Puyo Puyo or something, like, once you've locked it in, that's it. And you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to lose. Because I didn't mean to put that piece there.
Tetris, despite being sometimes very fast-paced and high energy, it's piece by piece, one thing at a time. Tetris Attack... It's very fluid.
It's also, like you can plan everything out because it's all there, right? I don't think anything falls in that game. It's just
the garbage falls.
The garbage falls.
And your pieces rise from the bottom if you pull them up.
And I think you can drop individual pieces out from the column, right?
If you have a free space below, you can move a space and an emptiness and switch that, and it can cause it to drop. And then you can't revert it. There are non-reversible moves, but they're rare.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to start rattling off some of my worthy discourse, because it sounds like Andrew is wrapping up.
I'm all done. I mean, I could go on for more, but I've more than covered five. I've taken all of Paul's extras. I'm done for now.
I mean, I had, like I've said, I had Link's Awakening on there, Secret of Mana, Secret of Evermore. Secret of Evermore, though, I just want to throw out there is like, that game's weird. Like, it's more in the Earthbound vein than all these other RPGs, because, like, I mean, you're a kid with a dog and a backpack, and, like, you look like Marty McFly almost or something.
And you're time traveling.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's...
I loved it, though. I really loved it.
I absolutely loved it, yeah, but it's of a different cloth than, than all the other fantasy RPGs.
Especially people who thought they were getting a sequel or something like Secret of Mana, especially because it has not just the name, but also so much of the item and inventory and combat sequences are just like Secret of Mana. It was a very reasonable expectation, and then the story is nothing like Secret of Mana.
We already mentioned Donkey Kong Country, but just... Isn't my memory something like it was touted at, because that was Silicon, didn't they partner with Silicon Graphics to do that game or something? So it was like a big deal. It's like, oh, the same company that did Jurassic Park is like helping power the graphics processing behind this game is why it looked outstanding as it did. And yeah, it's very strong platformer and has spawned its own long-lived line of games, although that's what Nintendo kind of does. Illusion of Gaia was kind of is off a lot of... It's not really off the radar, but it's way down on the list when you're talking about the games, the RPGs, the action RPGs of the generation specifically.
When Square is making all their great games, Enix is not letting up either. So Illusion of Gaia is probably their best on this platform. Not necessarily the best of this generation, but it was definitely the best on the SNES.
That Illusion of Gaia was another contender when the category was most pathos. That was another one, because I remember like going to some like the Starfield areas in that game and being like, or like even just some of the ruins you're going to, you can feel the sense of loneliness in these ruins.
And there was a real heft and age to that game as well.
Yeah. I have not revisited it in probably since I originally played it. So, but well, just to finish off the RPG stuff. And I think Andrew wanted to revisit it. Final Fantasy Adventure. I think it had a different name. See, I never played the Final Fantasy Legends. Even though those I think are more adhere to the old school Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy Adventure, though, was more like their attempt to make Zelda, I think. I don't know if they would phrase it like that, but that's how I viewed it. I think it did have a different name. I think it might have been the first Seiken Detsu, or however you say that game.
So Secret of Mana is a sequel to Final Fantasy Adventure.
Yeah, it's like the third one something.
Secret of Mana is the second one.
It is that's right. The third one was one of the first... Yeah, it was one of the first ROMs I ever tried out. Because I'm like, oh, there's a sequel to Secret of Mana? Because Secret of Evermore wasn't a sequel. Let me try this game.
Yeah, Trials of Mana never really made it over the pond, as it were.
Although it is now, I think. Ogre Battles on my list as well. Liberty or Death. I think I mentioned that, Paul, during when you were talking about your, was it Romance of the Three Kingdoms?
Probably.
Yeah. So this is the same company, but it was their take on the American Revolution. Liberty or Death, you can pretty much. Yeah, I loved that game. I couldn't get into almost any of their other games. I tried, I don't know if I tried Romance of Three Kingdoms, any versions, or I tried Nobunaga's Ambition and Inindo, Way of the Ninja. Like, none of their other games grabbed me like this. Maybe it was because I knew the material better.
It's probably a little easier when you're dealing with Western names and characters that you recognize from history rather than, like, what is probably just a seemingly random jumble of vowels and letters.
We had the American Revolution drilled into our heads all through elementary school, and that would have been around the same time or shortly. I would have played this game shortly after that, maybe, or something like that. But yeah, but even just like, it was just such a great strategy game, and like determining like food and ammunition and training your troops and who you're going to promote and all that. It was, yeah. Why, for probably all the same reasons you loved Romance of the Three Kingdoms, I loved Liberty or Death. A game that almost made my fun with friends, because it's way more fun with friends than by yourself, is Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I don't know if either one of you played that game.
I've never played it, but I do know of it, so yeah.
It has like some insane number of levels, and I don't know if I ever got past level 20, which is a level with these like gigantic ants that come out of the ground, and the only way to kill them that I remember is shooting a bazooka. So if you run out of bazooka, you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm not beating this level now. But like, yeah, all the levels, there's like hedge mazes, there's malls full of like Chucky dolls that come at you. They're not actually Chucky dolls, but that's what they are. Yeah, just the whole B-movie motif. And then, yeah, that kind of probably led to my interest in stuff like the band The Misfits and like Evil Dead and like all these schlocky B horror movies probably came from me playing Zombies Ate My Neighbors. Also, Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins. I mentioned it earlier. That was in the running for my personal best. That I loved that game so much. It introduced Wario. It was just such a refined version of that 2D scrolling, even more so than I remember playing it and loving it way more than Super Mario World.
But not as good as Mega Man X.
I don't dislike Mega Man. I think I just never got into it like everybody else I know. So I have to acknowledge Mega Man's a good game, but it just wasn't for me. I have to give shout out to Super Metroid and Metroid 2 Return of Samus. They are stellar games in themselves. I played both of them. Metroid 2 was a classic on Game Boy. But I also have to, I am totally indebted to them for a game that's coming next generation. I believe it's PlayStation is next generation.
N64, PlayStation.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be in there.
So, yeah. Spoiler alert, it's Symphony of the Night, Castlevania. There's a reason why that whole genre is now called Metroidvania games. Like, it's still being used for games coming out today that are...
Time to change my pick for you for next generation.
Time to change your pick.
I could use a free pick because I'm kind of low, so... I think I probably would have figured it out anyway.
Honestly, if you didn't know Symphony of the Night was going to be somewhere in the five categories for that generation, you don't really know me.
Take the free point.
Hey, I thought I could have sworn Castlevania 2 was going to be on there, and I was wrong about that. So
I do appreciate Castlevania 2 more than like the online community you might, or something who just wants to post memes about what a terrible night dive occurs. As if there's any good night dive occurs, but you know.
It's a very memorable phrase for me because I heard it so often. I mean, heard in the sense that I saw it scrolling across my screen.
There was another game, was it this generation, I think? I almost put Shadowgate final. That's coming up as a worthy discourse because we haven't gone long enough. But Shadowgate was on there. Or no, Shadowgate was a good game too. Shadowrun was a game that I played and I was like, I cannot beat this game. And then, like, you know, 5-10 years later, I was like, I'm going to beat this damn game. And I probably read whatever the one trick was that I could never figure out on my own. I was like, oh, sure, that's what you're supposed to do. And then I kind of cruised through the rest of the game. Shadowrun was good because I did like, I loved that style, the cyberpunk style. But there's not, I don't know, nowadays it's way more commonplace. Back when Shadowrun came out, I can't even say that because, like, there's been cyberpunk games forever, but I didn't play them as much as I did Shadowrun.
Fantastic.
And I've gone way over my 5-game limit, but Paul only said 2, so I'll...
I mean, technically I had 3, because Street Fighter 2 was one of mine, too.
This was a tough generation.
This is probably going to be, like, the hardest generation I had to whittle it down, because I probably played the most... I can't even say that. It's probably the next
generation is also going to be hard. These are all hard. I'm trying to narrow down an entire generation to 5 games, 10, whatever. It's
but
just tough.
I was probably more impressionable. Sounds like a terrible word here, but like I was more impressionable to the ideas and everything. Like these were this everything was new in this generation.
Yeah.
Right. Like I mean,
I don't know. Like I guess to pimp the next episode a little bit. Like I feel like 3 of my favorite games of all time are in the next generation.
Interesting.
Yeah, next generation is going to be a very, very strong.
It's hard. I guess at least 2 generations or something. I had like 5 different games. I'm like, these are all should be like my favorite game of this generation.
Well, generation 4 should be just tossed in the trash now. All right.
Anything else before we clock out?
I think we can all say that, yeah, like we've said many times before, we could keep talking about far more than they're on.
And if you do want to keep talking with us, you can check us out at our website, rampantdiscourse.com. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/rampantdiscourse. On Twitter, at rampantdisc. Talk to us on Discord at discord.io/rampantdiscourse.
Tell us what important game we missed.
Yeah, any other platforms that I'm missing? I don't think so. That's probably about it. All right, that's all. Can't stop the discourse.
Yes, big desk, we know. All right.